Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Jason, Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas to you, Scott, and to all the listeners out there. Merry Christmas, live long and prosper, etc.
I was thinking about how I was going to greet you today because this, you know, despite all evidence to the contrary, sometimes I put some thought into what I'm going to say on this podcast. And I thought, oh, I should say it's Christmas in America, but of course it's Christmas all over the place.
So it is.
I thought that wouldn't be appropriate to.
It is.
Say.
Yes. Congratulations to our Canadian listeners who have celebrated Christmas in early November.
That's right. I love a Canadian Christmas. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, it's Christmas Eve when we're recording this, because it's Christmas Eve when the 11th episode of Star Trek Discovery, which is the episode we're going to talk about, 11th mm-hmm. episode of season 3, I should say, Sokol, I think that's how they say
Sokol,
it.
Sokol,
aired on CBS All Access, and so we're going to talk about it a little. It is not a Christmas special, so it's not very
Christmassy. Not. It has a few moments where I thought, again, it was potentially almost a little bit Christmassy in a Christmas carol-y kind of way, but then not. Mm. And then, of course, you're not gonna believe this, Scott, but next episode, it's on New Year's Eve.
What? I didn't even put that together, but that makes sense.
Gonna keep playing Discovery. Why wait?
I guess, you know, the Discovery waits for no holidays.
Nope.
Gosh darn it.
That's right.
I guess that's the nice thing about being on streaming, right? Because I imagine on network TV, they schedule some kind of holiday-specific thing. Like,
right.
I don't know, It's a Wonderful Life or something playing.
And you can watch it whenever. You don't have to watch mm-hmm. it on the day. You know, we do, because we do a podcast about it. But
that's because we love our listeners.
Yep, it is. That is exactly why.
And this episode is unbeknownst to me, perhaps. You have your finger on the pulse of all things Star Trek, Jason, so maybe you knew. But this is a sneaky two-parter, at least.
At least, if not three-parter. It is, I figured we were going to get some interesting confrontations here. I didn't realize until we were about three-quarters of the way through that this was very clearly going to be a story that continued into at least the next episode and presumably mm-hmm. all the way to the season finale.
I imagine there are, what, two more episodes left, and I imagine they will just be a three-part story.
Yeah, I would think.
That's just a guess, though. But let's continue our tradition of talking about if we like this episode or not before we talk about the episode.
Oh, sure.
So, Jason, what are your thoughts, good, bad, ugly, about this episode? Did you like it?
I liked parts of it a lot. I liked other parts of it in the moment, but I'm not sure it made sense. And then there are parts of it that I felt like just didn't make any sense, or perhaps if there is an explanation, it was not given to us. And that I was frustrated with some stuff, because some stuff happens and I think, why did it do that? Other than that, I think that as a piece of television, I mean, it moved along, it was exciting. I think lots of interesting things mm-hmm. happened. The characters got challenged. There were some interesting kind of questions. Makes some creative decisions I did not expect that I found delightful. And yet also there are moments where I'm like, why did that happen? So I'd say it's a mixed bag. I'd say it's one of those things where I think it works better as a, kind of kinetic piece of TV than it does necessarily if you start asking questions about why certain things happen, because I think they happened because they needed them to happen to tell the story they wanted to tell, which is honestly a failing of Discovery in general, is that sometimes it feels like they do things that don't make much sense because they decided what their story is, and by gum, they're going to tell it, even if it doesn't make any sense. How about you? What did you think?
13 episodes, and they are going to tell this story.
Yep.
Overall, I liked it. I think you're right in that it is one of these episodes where, as you're watching it, you're engrossed, and you're like, oh, yes, this is good. And then when it's over, you think, some of that just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, wait a second. Why did that happen again? And some of it, right. What I love is that there are the main plot of this episode, I did mm-hmm. not even remotely expect, and I love that. I love that they are setting you up for a, you know, there's somebody down on a planet and we're going to rescue them and all of that, and it ends up being this super weird holodeck puzzle, I thought that was amazing and not at all what I expected. And so I thought that part was great. And a little bit more, I've been saying this all year, a little bit more Doctor Who than Star Trek usually is, but I feel like Star Trek can be all sorts of weird things. And, you know, original series especially did all sorts of stuff that actually this reminded me of a little bit, the fact that they're in kind of an allegory. Either a TOS episode or one of those TNG episodes written by Joe Manosky, a real strange episode. But I love that part of it. I love that, like, you're obviously escalating to your season finale here, and it's going to be about, like, a 100-year-old child in a holodeck? Okay, cool. That's great. Yeah,
that's
I love
pretty
that.
Star Trek-y, I think.
Yeah.
But yes, and I do think, so there are a couple of things I really liked about this episode. I always enjoy a holodeck episode. I always enjoy a holodeck episode where the holodeck is kind of malfunctioning.
Yeah.
So that is this episode to a T. You know, we spend a lot of time, because this season has been spending a lot of time talking about what's causing the burn, what, you know, is it going to be some kind of Federation weapon or something, some big secret? Is it going to be Michael Burnham caused the burn somehow? And we were hoping that it wasn't. And if we are to believe what this episode leads us to believe, which I have no reason to doubt, although maybe in the next two episodes I will have reasons to doubt, it seems that none of those things are what caused the burn. So I like that. I don't know. Like, we don't, you've watched the episode. So the 100-year-old kid that's on the planet seemingly has, kind of evolved or been mutated and caused the burn somehow by, using, his having strong emotions and
sort of like bonded with this planet full of, that's just a dilithium planet basically, and has bonded with it somehow and has this ability to sort of like, it's, you know, his emotions or something can trigger these waves that cause dilithium to go critical. And so it's a surprising science fiction-y kind of concept, that this is not some sort of like science experiment or malevolent sort of enemy who decided to detonate the dilithium. It is more that it's a tragic accident that led to this tragic figure who doesn't even understand what he's doing that caused it, and that the Discovery crew has to figure out a way to reach this person who has essentially never lived outside of a holodeck, but the holodeck is failing because it was only supposed to keep him alive until a rescue ship arrived, and oops, that took 100 years.
Yeah, because,
or 1,000 years, depending on how you look at it.
Oh, that's true. So we will see if that is as straightforward as they make it seem in this episode. I mean, not that it's super straightforward in this episode either, but it is pretty clear cut. And of course, I mean, the big thing that was a delightful surprise is when they beam down, because this episode is really kind of two, I guess there are three parts, kind of three plots. We've got to be on the holodeck bunker, basically, what's happening on Discovery. And then, kind of Michael, branches off at some point. So there's like a little subplot there that, is related, but they split up. Well, you never really should do that, but
I wrote that down. No, split the party, but they split the party.
They split the party. Always a bad idea. Before we get to that though, when they beam down, the holodeck decides to change their appearance so that they don't scare the child, because the child has never seen people outside of the holodeck. Doesn't really make a lot of sense though, because there are a bunch of people on the holodeck that they would have seen anyway, but whatever. It gives us Doug Jones outside of his makeup and looking like Doug Jones, who plays Saru, for those who don't know.
Yes.
Which was a delight.
It was delightful. This is one of those things that doesn't make sense, because they make Burnham into a Trill. But she's a human, so unless it's like they're literally characters from the holodeck, but like the child is a Kelpian, so presumably there were
Kelpians.
And we later see a Kelpian elder, so why would you change a Kelpian into something and a human into something and another human into something when there were presumably humans and Kelpians already in the program? Don't really understand that. It's waved away. I can headcanon it, but like it's an excuse to have this be, first off, kind of surreal, which I like, and to have this episode where Doug Jones is running around without his makeup on.
Yes, and I guess you could say the holodeck and the computer that's running it is failing because it's been bombarded by this radiation. So perhaps it's not making the best decisions that it could do. But I will also say that Atril looks almost identical to a human.
Exactly, so, yeah.
Unless you're really paying attention. Yeah. So it seems like a weird choice, but whatever. It was fun to see them like
that. Sure. Sure, it was, and again, the Trill and the Bajoran ones are there to sell you on the fact that Saru now looks human, and how could that possibly be? And it's just, you know, because it's fun, and also because they do want this whole holodeck thing to be surreal, which it is, which is great. It's sort of like Lord of the Rings kind of crumbling castles at one point. That's kind of interesting. There's a monster.
There's a monster, a Kelpian monster, covered in kelp.
Covered in kelp. I wonder how you say kelp and Kelpian. Probably not the same. Probably not.
And I did like that monster because it was kind of like swimming through water, although it wasn't in water. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then we find out that there's a Kelpian folklore tale that it is kind of a villain from. And you have to, I guess in Kelpian folklore, you have to face your strongest fear before you can be the most that you can, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense based on what we know of Kelpians, but be that as it may.
Well, this is Kelpians from hundreds of years in the future, right? So maybe.
I know, but Saru said he had heard of this story.
Yeah, he knew it too.
I don't really understand.
They're just trying to scare you. They're just trying to scare you because it's all about fear with Kelpians. Maybe that's it. I don't know, Scott. I don't understand that. Burnham falls up at one point, which was a nice moment where she falls and she goes up instead of down. And I was like, see, I like this. I like how weird this episode is. That was all good. And then the science fiction aspect of it where it's they go and are talking to like a Federation council or something that's actually the computers. And they have a various like degraded variables for things because they can't, the whole script has sort of fallen apart. And they finally have to say, we are the anticipated protocol, is what they have
Are you the anticipated input, if not activated defense mechanism? We are the anticipated input.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, which is the rescue people. We're here. Yes, that's us to rescue. And they're like, great. Yes. That's great.
And that was apparently a holo program of the day that Kaminar was inducted into the Federation.
Right. Right. That's part of the surrealness nature of this is that there are the scenes that have survived, the scenes and settings and holo characters that have survived to get to this point.
I thought this was a really good Saru episode and a Doug Jones episode because we get to see him emote without a whole bunch of stuff on his face.
Right.
You know, he's been separated from his people for so long. And then he kind of had a taste of it, but then that was ripped away from him. And now he's, you know, everyone he knows is dead, so it's he has a lot of pathos, this Saru, and he's, you know, never seen a super old Kelpian.
So this is one of the things that bothered me about this episode, though, and it goes back to last week as well, which is suddenly there's this idea that, like, if Saru sees a Kelpian, he's not going to be objective, he's not going to make good decisions. There is nothing in Saru's character that would ever, ever, ever suggest that he would behave that way. And I thought it was weird last week when this was brought up by the Admiral, and Saru was like, no, it's fine. And then this one, we get Burnham telling Book, like, I don't know if he can be subjective. And then later, he says, oh, I got to go back. And she's like, no, you got to stay here. And besides which, you're not, you know, you're not subjective anyway. And I'm like, I still don't see it. And I can't rationalize it away because I know he left home and then he got to go back home briefly and see his sister, and then they you know, she got a spaceship and came and sent him to the future. But, like, I don't think it's been part of Saru's character that he is desperate to see another Kelpian. Like, I feel like that's never really been part of his character, and he's so competent that I don't know. I'm not buying what they're selling there about Saru being kind of off his game because it's a Kelpian. I get what they're trying to do, and I don't read it that way. I can't see him. They've set him up too well as a good captain who is very level-headed to have him be like, ooh, it's a Kelpian, I'm going to break all the rules. I don't buy it.
Well, and the only reason I like that is because it gave us that moment when Saru was like, well, I have to go because I'm the captain. So you, Michael, have to stay, obviously, to help save this child. And Michael's like, no, you should stay because, you know, you're Kelpians and, you know, Kelpian code and all that.
That's the
but
thing.
But then she says that he wasn't subjective. I didn't really get that because he seemed like he was making all the right decisions.
No. And I think her counter decision that you should stay, I know you're the captain, but you're the only one who can handle this because this child is a Kelpian and you're a Kelpian and you have to be here. That's the only way we're going to solve this. I like that. I like that argument.
Yes.
I don't like the other argument, which is besides which you're dumb and you're making bad decisions.
Because he wasn't really making any bad decisions. I mean,
no.
He possibly made the one bad decision is maybe he stayed in the Nebula too long. But then he was like, okay, let's leave.
And that's in this episode where they're trying to give him some example, you know, of him making a bad decision. And I didn't buy that either as something that Saru would do. So I don't.
No.
You know, if the question is WWSD, the answer is not what he did in this episode. But that's okay. He turns into a human. That was also something I didn't think he would do. So,
Saru has many layers.
Kelpian layers. Yeah, I don't know. But I did love all that stuff. I loved all the holodeck stuff. I thought it was great and weird. Like a broken, it's like a haunted holodeck almost. It's broken and you've got this. And they meet the Kelpian.
The kid, yeah.
And the Kelpian is kind of weird because has been raised by holo programs and has never been outside. And they don't even talk about outside anymore. And there's a weird Kelp monster that is representing his fears, and Burnham pretends to be a holo character, which is really great.
That's a good scene. Yeah.
I loved all of that. Like I thought all that stuff was so unexpected and strange. I thought it was really good.
Yes. And I assume, this is my, my prediction for, what the Kelp monster is predicting, or protecting, which is, I think fairly obvious. It's the exit, from the program into the real world. Is my prediction. We'll find out. Because he has to face his biggest fear to, you know, go past it and leave the whole place. But so yeah, that's all great. They're on the holodeck. That's the bulk of this episode, right? And before they go down, Saru has to leave somebody in charge because he's the captain. And so, of course, he has a number one who is the obvious person to leave in charge. Good old acting captain, Tilly.
Yeah. Boy, they set this up, right? This is why they set this up, isn't it?
And so that brings us to the discovery plot, which is another really good scene between Michael and Tilly, where Michael's like, you know, I know you're nervous the first time being on the con. And she tells the story about this imperfection in the captain's chair. I liked all that. That was very touching. Mm-hmm. And boy, what a character Tilly is and how a journey she has had, I think, from you know, season one, episode one to now. Very satisfying arc for her so far. And now she's the captain, and she does captain things, makes hard decisions, what's this? Approaching a Federation ship, which clearly is not a Federation ship.
It's a trap.
And it is our friend and yours, Osyra.
Osyra, whatever her name is, yeah. Yeah.
The evil green lady.
Evil green lady. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all a trick. Tilly figures it out. And
she does.
And they have a cloaking device because all Federation ships have that now, apparently. So they kind of like cloak and then sit there, I guess, or something. They can't see each other. They don't know where anybody
is.
Yeah, a little bit.
If you cloak and don't move,
they could just shoot you.
Exactly. But Osyra's ship also has a cloaking device. So everybody's cloaked, just kind of hanging out, throwing barbs back and forth at each other.
Yeah, that was the big scene, right? Where Osyra talks to Tilly and is trying to like puncture her with her pretty astute analysis of Tilly's personality. And Tilly is really cool about it and throws it back at her and says, that's projection. You know, classic Freudian move there. You really doubt yourself, don't you? Which I thought was a really great scene. And then, you know, she cuts it off and Tilly's like, whoa. That was good. I liked all of that. That was all fine.
Oh, but there are some questions about like how does Osyra know where they are? I assume it has something to do with Book using that emerald chain technology.
I guess because if there isn't an explanation for it, it doesn't make any sense because Osyra knows where they are, knows about the spore drive, all of that stuff. So either the Book's thing was not as clear as they thought, or the Admiral is bad, or someone else in Starfleet is bad because they have way too much information about Discovery for and the ability to get here. They're like, oh, they might have seen us jump or something. But like, I just, again, it's another one of those things that maybe will be resolved in the next couple episodes, but I didn't really understand that. And then I don't understand the assault on the ship because, like, okay, people have personal transporters and there are transporters everywhere. Presumably there are you know, shields to prevent that. But was there a line about the shields being overridden or going down or something? Because it's all of a sudden there are, like, people showing up in the ship. And the Discovery people, like, Tilly keeps calling Stamets. And he's been taken, like, it felt like a million years ago. And nobody is saying, like, we detected that they beamed in, or yeah, people don't have sidearms at the ready, because if the shields go down, they're going to beam to your bridge and try to take it over. Like, I don't understand how you can react this way and how this is structured for them to do it this way. Like, I needed to see more of a total breakdown and failure. And instead, it's like they're just sitting around waiting for things to happen. I don't know. It didn't make any sense to me the way it goes down.
Well, they did say that, so they had to leave the nebula because they had to fix their shields.
Yeah.
And so they were working on that. And then Tilly said, oh, don't we have a cloaking device? I just remembered. And someone says, yes, we do, but we can't power the shields and the cloaking device at the same time. So I think they took their shields down to cloak. And then the angry, frightened ribbon of energy came and hit them all and knocked them out of cloak. So I assume they were unshielded,
okay,
and uncloaked.
And then they get the two people who in the helmets or whatever, who beam into the spore chamber.
Yes.
But like, Tilly is asking for Stamets for a very long time. And first off, they don't beam to the bridge or anywhere else right away. And second,
yes, that doesn't make any sense.
If you live in a world where that kind of beaming can happen, why would you not have? I mean, they're completely like, they just, a bunch of people beam to the bridge and they're like, oh, well, I guess you got us, which again, I just don't. It doesn't make sense to me. How could that be how a ship would be made? Now, maybe there'll be an explanation, which is coming in another episode of, like, well, this is why that happened. But it just, it kept tripping me up. Like, I guess they could have made it like, if this was early in the season, it would have been like, well, of course, Discovery doesn't know about this tech and does, they're not prepared for it. But they're supposedly prepared for it now. And
they've been upgraded.
It's just way too easy. So
yes, it was very easy. And they also, so clearly Osira knows a lot, because they also have the little helmet of mind control,
little
that they
brain,
put on Stamets.
Brain thing for Stamets. Yeah, right.
Yes, and then lets them, you know, do the wacky jump. I did like when Osira said, so what do you say when you do your jump?
Yeah.
Nobody? Okay, well, I'll just get it out of here.
Yeah.
I like that.
That was funny.
And I like Osira as a character, even though she's hardly a character. She's just a green villain who shows up and she's evil. And I know we complained about that in Picard with the evil Romulan lady, whose name I still can't remember. But at least I can remember Osira's name. And she doesn't have much depth to her, but she's just enjoying being a villain so much.
Yeah. Yeah,
she is. I like it. And she just wants everything. That's what she wants. So there's no problem there. That's her motivation. What is her motivation? She wants everything that people have. There you go. And yeah, I mean, that's really the episode, I guess. I mean, I liked it. It is an episode, Jason, that does not withstand a lot of scrutiny.
No, it feels like, and again, I can't tell from here whether that's because there's more to be revealed. Mm-hmm. Or whether that's because they really don't want you to pay attention to all the parts that don't hold together, because they just want to get to the story, to the next bit. And it is a very exciting ending, right? Because Discovery,
yes,
and Osiris ship spore jump away. Could they do that? Did we know they could do that?
I guess they're linked now because her ship has tentacles and...
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. I don't know. I mean, it was all very exciting, and it's a great cliffhanger, because by the time they get there and book ship... they see them jump away, and it's like, well, what do we do now? Because we're way out here and at this nebula, and there's the radiation and all that. Like, all that is going on.
Transwarp conduit, I assume.
I assume so. And Adira has beamed down with some stuff. So we're going to get
radiation pills.
Yeah.
They would take some with them, but whatever.
Well, I think the idea was that they were hidden from them because of the hologram, and I don't know how that impacts
maybe
Adira, although maybe Gray can help there since Gray is not actually...
Oh, yes. Gray is back, FYI.
Yeah, that happens in the first scene, which picks up right after the last episode left off. I thought it was okay.
I did think that was good.
So, yeah, all that is very exciting, and we're going to a big, exciting, dramatic series of conclusions here, and that's all good. But, yeah, at the same time, I got a little frustrated that parts of it that need to happen for the story arc to happen didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, yeah. You know, in the end, I'm going to decide that I thought this episode was, on balance, good because the holodeck stuff was so weird, unexpected, and good, including Doug Jones. Maybe that's not everybody's cup of tea, but I just thought it was great that after all of this season, 11 and a half, basically, episodes in, there is this super weird left turn where all of a sudden it's all about, like, a Kelpian that's lived for 100 years inside Kelpian. A holodeck that's breaking down, and they have to try to do therapy and reason with him in order to save the universe. That feels very Star Trek in its way. Unexpected, yes. But delightful. And so that part of it, I thought that was great.
And I will say this episode looks really good. Like, the nebula is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
The holodeck environments are very cool looking.
Yeah.
The holograms flicker.
There is a scene where Burnham is standing in front of like a doorway that has kind of like smoke or steam or fog or something coming with it, where I felt like I could see the like feathering fuzz line between the front foreground and the background. I was like, don't put the camera where the fog is behind her, because it is not good. But in general, yeah, it looked really good. And the way they did the kind of glitching hollows was fun. Mm-hmm. And holodecks too. Like, Discovery couldn't really do holodecks before because it was too far in the past. But now they got them everywhere. And in fact, there's a line where it's something like, this is some sort of holo program. I'm like... Okay, we call that the holodeck, but sure. Sure, you don't know.
They don't know that. They haven't done it.
No.
They interact with holograms, but they don't know about the holodeck. And I do enjoy the fact that, as with all holodecks, it's a very small – well, we don't know how big this space is, but it's a fairly confined space. So I like, in my head, thinking that they're all right next to each other.
Yeah.
They just can't see each other because they're, you know, all the heavy proton, heavy light, or whatever they say, coffee stuff in the holodeck is blocking it. So I enjoy that. Just my own little fun.
Yeah, I had that thought too, which is like, this is actually like a 12 by 12 room, but.
And they're all just right next to each other. And it makes perfect sense too. I didn't think about this, but this kid has been trapped for 100 years. Of course you're going to put them in a holodeck because otherwise they go crazy.
Yeah.
And so it makes perfect sense within Star Trek. So that's the episode. I think that I enjoyed watching it. The holodeck stuff was really good. I'm going to withhold judgment until I see the next episode, though, because I'm hoping that they will answer some unexplained.
That would be nice.
In this episode.
It doesn't have to
explain check every box, but just kind of like, how does she know where they were? No,
this is always the thing. When it's a multi-part episode, it's very hard to judge it until you get a chance to judge it as a whole. And this is rolling into at least next week, if not the week after. I do wonder whether they're going to do the thing that some shows do, where they're sort of like the culmination of the story is kind of in the penultimate episode. And then the last episode lets you kind of put on a different spin on it and send them off in a new direction. They probably won't do that.
Season four.
But I would love that to happen where it mostly gets resolved next week, and then the last week is like a little denouement. But you know, Star Trek doesn't usually do that. So, you know, we'll get what we get next week, and then onward to the finale.
I like that. Yes. So do you want to fire off the conspiracy phaser? Do you have any thoughts about what might be happening?
I don't. And the Next Time trailer was also not something that really gave me any information about anything. So I think let's keep the phaser holstered.
Oh, put that phaser back in your, like, pretend you're on the Discovery and just don't even have a phaser.
No, just stand there and wait for somebody to come and point a gun at you. Yeah.
With a cool helmet, and then just do whatever they tell you to.
Yeah.